Blog Talk Radio.
Your host, Merle Exit. It's a cloudy day here in Queens, New York. I have people ask me if I'm from Queens, and I tell them, oh, no, my folks are straight. And, the reason I also mention that I'm from Queens is because we have this wonderful theater located in Flushing Meadow Corona Park, which was the site of the 1939 and 1964 World's Fair. And one of the buildings that was left over for the 1964 World's Fair has become Queens Theater, also known as Queens Theater in the Park. And this coming Saturday, Melissa Manchester is going to be performing. Now, if you, in case you don't know who she is or going, I know who, what is she, no, when she sang it, okay. Here is probably the most popular song, and then I will get a hold of her.
Baby cried the day the circus came to town, 'cause she didn't want parades just passing by her. She painted on a smile and took up with some clown, while she danced without a net upon the wire. I know a lot about her, 'cause you see, baby is an awful lot like me. Don't cry out loud, just keep it inside. Learn how to hide your feelings. Fly high and proud, and if you should fall, remember you almost had it all. Baby saw that when they pulled the big top down, they left behind her dreams among the litter. In a different kind of love she thought she found, there was nothing left but sawdust and some glitter. But baby can't be broken, 'cause you see, she had the finest teacher, that was me. I told her, don't cry out loud, just keep it inside.
Okay, I played enough of the song. Now we know who she is. Hi, I'm Melissa.
Hi, darling. Hi, Melissa. How are you?
Okay. I figured I'm not going to play the whole song by now. If anybody doesn't know this the song, that's it, you know?
That's right. It must be the anthem of some country at this point.
Yeah, I think so. How are you doing?
I'm fine. I'm great. How are you doing?
Oh, just fine. So I hear you coming out to Queens, huh?
I am. I'm coming to the theater in the park this Saturday, and I'm looking forward to it.
Have you ever been there?
I have not. I mean, I was there when the World's Fair was there, but I've never been.
Oh, okay.
To the,
we're both showing our age, aren't we?
Yeah, right. And proud of it, kid.
Yeah, I know.
It's a privilege. No, I'm looking forward to it. There are two shows, you know, 2 and 8. So.
Oh yeah, I'll be there at the 2 o'clock show. That you're gonna love, absolutely love the theater. But let's get to you.
Okay.
So, I know what I didn't know is how much writing you did, the composing.
Yes, I do a lot of writing, still do, and I love it. Mm-hmm. It's part of what I do.
You and I guess I understand it started. You were getting lessons from Paul Simon. Is that it?
I had signed up for a class. I had been writing. I was a staff writer at the age of 17 at Chapel Music, and pardon me. I went to NYU for 1 year, and then the year I left, Paul felt like teaching for 6 months, and two of my friends signed my name up for his class, and he auditioned everybody. And I was accepted into the class, and the class lasted 6 months, and it was life altering. It was unbelievable.
Wow! What was your when you were looking out to get into the business? Was it more that you wanted to write songs, or you wanted to sing the songs?
Well, at the time, you know, the hybrid of a singer songwriter was really new, because suddenly pop radio was filled with singer songwriters. Prior to that, popular music was coming from Broadway and movies and all that stuff. But suddenly the radio was filled with, you know, the Beatles and Carole King and James Taylor and Stevie Wonder and all these exceptional artists who were writing their own thing. And so it created a new approach to American popular song, and that really resonated with me. And so I was writing all the time.
Well, that's fabulous.
Yeah.
What was the first song you wrote, and what did it feel like after you said, "Wow, I can write a song"?
That's a good question. I had two friends that got me writing, because I used to sing their songs for publishing companies, Jeff Sweet and Brett Mitchell, and Jeff is quite a prominent playwright now. But I would watch them write, and I went back to my mother's home, you know, where I was living. And I carefully walked up to my piano, which I had not been speaking to for a while since I hated taking piano lessons. And I wrote a song called Single Heart. And upon finishing that song, it was clear that I had just discovered another voice. And suddenly the floodgates opened and I was just writing all the time.
Isn't that a fabulous thing? It's like creating. The creating process is such
it is totally the creating process, but a lot of times people long to have an outlet, but they can't locate it. And to have actually been able to locate my creative outlet besides singing, the floodgates opened, and suddenly, you know, songs were just sort of gushing out of me, and that's what I became. You know, I became a singer-songwriter.
And you started working with doing jingles?
I did. I started
with Bette Midler and Barry Manilow?
Yeah, I started singing jingles when I was about 15, and I was making a very good living. I had all kinds of really interesting jobs. I was an usher at the Vivian Beaumont Theater. I parked cars for a little theater company on the East Side. As I said, I did jingles. And while I was singing jingles, I met Barry, because he was also a jingle singer. And he was, at the same time, the new music director for the up-and-coming Bette Midler, who was working at a club called the Continental Baths on West 74th Street. And I was working at a club called the Focus, which was diagonally opposite the Baths. And they
mm-hmm.
came in to see me on my night off, and Bette had just been on the Carson show. And for the first time, and so in between my sets, I went over to say hello and told her how excited we all were for her and what was she doing. And she said, she's getting ready for her first Carnegie Hall show. And I said, wow, are you going to have any background singers? Because that's, you know, what I did. And she said, gee, I don't know. Would you like to sing in back of me? And I said, well,
Actually, I'd like to sing instead of you, but I'd be happy to sing in back of you for a while. And Barry and I created the Harlette, what became the Harlette. And I was the tush in the middle, and I worked for her for about 6 months. But she was, you know, extraordinary.
Wow, that must have been a lot of fun, huh?
Well, it was amazing, you know, because she was so unlike anybody and so brilliant. And it was more than fun. It was serious fun. But you really saw her transport an audience. And this is pre-AIDS. This is just sort of wild, wild expressive times. And so it was really, really fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So after you did all these, the back, you wrote, like, I understand the first, your first smash hit was Midnight Blue.
Yeah.
All right. So
I co-wrote that with Carol Sager. And prior to that, I had two albums out on Bell Records, and then Bell was absorbed into Arista Records, and Midnight Blue was the first single.
Wow. You did a lot of writing, and you had songs recorded by...
Yeah. My songs were recorded by a lot of people. They still are, and it turned into a job of the future,
And I think, so what do you think, Through the Eyes of Love is even more known than Don't Cry Out Loud?
Well, you know, Through the Eyes of Love sort of became the wedding song and the romancing song and the courtship song. And it was a real gift to me. Marvin Hamlisch and Carol Sager wrote it for me, and it's sort of become this standard, which is really lovely, and it's lovely to have it, you know, be attached to that song.
Yeah, I think we're going to forever hear that.
I hope so. I hope so. You know, the thing is that I never get tired of singing these songs because they have grown with me, and they're such beautiful songs, some of which I've written and some of which my extraordinary friends have written, that they allow me as a singer to grow in them. And that's very lovely and very rare these days.
Well, I know to get the, now I'm going to get into some of the, like, present things. For instance, I see that you had co-starred with Kelsey Grammer, Frazier, in the Stephen Sondheim's musical masterpiece, Sweeney Todd.
Correct.
In Los Angeles.
For the 25th anniversary at the Amundsen Theater. It was incredible.
Which part did you have?
I played Beggar Woman, and what was thrilling about Beggar Woman was that they restored some of the music that had been cut for the character. So I was singing songs, you know, music that had never been performed on stage, and Mr. Sondheim was there, and it was really thrilling.
Wow, that was good. And then there was, and you starred in a Chicago premiere of Hats.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Hats was an interesting musical. It was the sort of gimmick of it was that the score was written by many songwriters, and my collaborator Sharon Vaughn and I contributed three songs to the score. But yes, I starred in it, and it was a very sweet musical, and it gets productions around the country.
So are we going to get it here in New York?
I don't know. You know, I really don't know. I'm working on a musical now with Rupert Holmes and Sharon Vaughn, and I do hope that that will come to New York at some point, but it's in the early stages.
By the way, I don't know if you know that at Queens Theater in the Park, that's one of the things they're doing, is they're bringing shows like Prior to Broadway.
Really?
Yes. Matter of fact, they just had one. I have an in, so I'll... they had a show called Chick Six, and it was this woman who composed the entire thing, and she was in it, and this whole thing, and it was great. And that's one of the things that they like to do. Well, you'll see. When you see the theater, you'll understand. It's really it's the best thing we got in Queens, the theater.
Wow, fantastic. Great.
Well, I'll introduce I'll introduce you to the right people.
Yeah, please.
Now, tell me about, also now there's this feature film called Dirty Girl.
Yes. Dirty Girl is a first-time effort by writer-director Abe Sylvia. It stars Mary Steenburgen, Dwight Yoakam, Tim McGraw, Juno Temple, Mila Jovovich. And it's a coming-of-age film that takes place in Oklahoma in 1987. And it's and the coming of age is of these two teenagers, a boy and a girl. And the boy is a young gay kid who, in Oklahoma in 1987, had created a very small world, except for his music, which sort of connected him to the outer world. And it turns out that I am his muse, and my music is his muse. So I have 9 songs in this film. And they needed an original song for a montage in the middle. And Mary Steenburgen, whom I have written with before, is a fantastic lyricist. And we wrote an original song called Rainbird. And I'll be performing it along with many other things. So it was really, really, really thrilling to write this original song for the movie.
Well, I'm going to play a little of it, okay?
Fabulous.
Okay, here we go. Great. And fabulous.
Thank you, my dear. I'm glad you liked it.
Oh, yeah. Is the movie out now, or?
It was released. It's in certain markets. It may be going to DVD. It's a really beautiful movie. It's very funny. It's very quirky. And look for it.
So, when you... I love when certain markets mean to places where they have the, I guess artsy movies versus your main theaters? Is that the...
Well, Well, I don't know because I'm not the distributing company, but it was through Harvey Weinstein's company. So if it's not out any longer, it definitely will be going directly to video.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe hopefully I'll get to have a copy of it since I gather
sure.
I'm not going to be able to see it.
I guess, yeah, well, we'll see, right.
Also, that I understand that you received the Governor's Award from the National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences.
Tell me about that. Well, they deemed me worthy of being recognized after surviving this crazy business for so long, and it was a while ago, and it was lovely. And you know, the thing is, it's quite an achievement just to survive in the arts as a way to have a life's journey, because life as an artist, as you know, is so precarious. And so to look back on a 40-year career and say, boy, this worked out all right. Very bumpy, but nonetheless, it turned into an extremely interesting life, and somebody thinks that it's worthy of being acknowledged. It's pretty cool.
And by the way, when you say the governor, we're talking about the governor of California, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was just kind of wondering, because I heard the governor's award. I'm going, I'll assume it's California, but that's fabulous. Are there any particular songs that, like, are dear to your heart that may not have been, the most recognizable, but dear to your heart?
Well, you know, sure. I mean, everything that you write is a miracle, because every time I finish writing something, I cannot fathom how I did it, and I'm not sure if I'll ever be able to do it again because the process is so mysterious. But specifically, you know, I think Midnight Blue is always going to be the one that is dear to my heart because it was the first. And there is something that is sweet about that and has a longing, which is sort of timeless. But the one that I'm very proud of was on my last album called When I Was Down That Road, and the name of the song is called When Paris Was a Woman. It took me a very long time to write that because it was about Gertrude Stein and Alice Toklas and all of the artists that lived in Paris and visited her salon. So that, for me, and I wrote that by myself, and that, for me, was a real achievement to have been able to, I think, capture that time in the 20s in Paris. So, yeah, that's pretty dear to my heart.
You Should Hear. Tell me about You Should Hear.
You Should Hear, she talks about, it was written by my two friends, Tom Snow and Dean Pitchford. They're extremely successful songwriters of note. They wrote the song Footloose. Well, they've just written tons and tons and tons of hits. And, they wrote You Should Hear, She Talks About You, and it was a huge and unexpected hit for me, and it earned me my Grammy, and that was lovely. And, made me the queen of aerobics classes around the country for a while.
Mm-hmm. So, in other words, there are songs you wrote for yourself, and then there were songs that people wrote for you.
Correct.
Oh, wow. And now, when you're writing the song, you're writing both the music and the lyrics, I assume? Or sometimes,
no,
in other words, when you're co-writing.
It depends on whoever I'm writing with. If I'm writing with a lyricist, then I do collaborate on lyrics some, but mostly I'm working on music. But when I'm in the room with a composer, then I work on lyrics. So I write whatever's left over.
And when you do write, I mean, is it like things in your life or kind of things, or what What prompts
what
you?
What inspires me? Well, you know, life is extremely inspiring, and I'm inspired by overhearing conversations, the way people express themselves. Sometimes it has to do with what I'm going through. Sometimes it has to do with what I've observed. Sometimes it has to do with periods of history that are interesting to me. You just never know. And when you get an idea, when I get an idea anyway, I have to then figure out if what is coming to me is a title or is it part of a verse, or and who would be saying that or singing that. I mean, it's really quite mysterious, and it never shows up in the same way for me. And so I just have to sort of get out of the way and let whatever is trying to be expressed in the form of a song sort of show up. And I do quite a bit of writing in the shower, which is weird, but it's true. And I'm not the only one who has that experience. There's something that happens in the shower with water running and the sympathetic tones. Stuff just shows up. It's very weird.
You know, singing in the shower, huh?
Yeah, singing in the shower. Yeah, I teach at USC out here in LA, and I was just having this discussion with some of my students, and they also had that shower experience.
That's great. Now, are you going to go on tour, or are you just saying?
Just
I think I'll go to New York City and do a show, and then that's it.
Well, you know, the thing is that gigs show up. And I love New York. It's my home. And it was part of an East Coast run. I'll be playing in Virginia the night, two nights before I play in New York. So it all works out. I mean, it's sort of impossible to come out and do a one-off. So, you know, you usually try to attach a couple of shows together and you can pay your bills and go see folks in the same neighborhood. And this worked out, and I'm thrilled.
So where do you go next after Queens?
After Queens, I come home because it's a holiday and I still have to finish teaching. And then I go to, then I'm out here in California and I'm doing 4 concerts in December.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I'm doing a bunch of concerts in Salt Lake City. So, yeah, I'm all over the place.
So you're kind of coming here to New York, not just to do a show, but you're going to hang a little bit and visit?
Well, I hope so. I don't have that much time, but always, yeah, I try because I have lots of friends.
I mean, yeah, I was going to say you have friends here that are, I don't know whether you have friends that you grew up with as opposed to just, you know, people you've met in the business.
No, I have some friends that have grown up there. Mm-hmm.
Oh, so they'll be thrilled, huh?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, that's absolutely fabulous. Now, by the way, I understand that you have an appointment to go to. Am I correct?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, because I would keep you on for longer. But what I'm going to do actually is I'm going to play some of the music after we finish the interview, so I'll let you go and do that, and I'll see you on Saturday. And
I'm excited.
And I won't be wearing a red carnation, but I'll say something that'll have you recognize who I am.
Wonderful.
And we'll get some photos too.
Great.
Well,
awesome.
It was absolutely fabulous talking with you, and I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Merle. You take care.
Yes, you too.
All right. Bye-bye, Henry.
Bye. Yes, that was Melissa Manchester. So let's hear what I want to hear right now, then. Let's start with Midnight Blue.
Midnight blue.
Yeah, that was Midnight Blue. And now we'll hear the other song, You Should Hear. Someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted. Fairy tale brownies. they may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale. Yes, and you can get these wonderful brownies at www.brownies.com. Well, the holidays are coming up, and this is probably a great time to get the brownies. I think I read there in the catalog that if order over $150, you get 20% off. And can you do that? You think we're not talking $150 to go to one person? You know, just want you to keep that in mind. I mean, these are really like outrageous brownies. And right now, they also have the truffle brownies, which means they're little square brownies that are dipped in the dark Calbo chocolate. My God. And they have the cookies. Wow. Yeah. Well, I'm going to be going into some other kind of chocolates. There's a company called Gnosis, as in diagnosis, so G-N-O-S-I-S, that are they're located in Queens. And apparently they have this dark chocolate. Not only is it sweetened with agave, I think it's called. I forgot. But also they have all kinds of things in there, some nutritional things going into the chocolate. So I guess you get to have a lot of nutrition while you eat your nutritious dark chocolate. And, I'll be getting some, I believe, that I'll be able to sample some in the mail. I'll be tasting them and having them on the line to talk about these chocolates. Well, I'm going to end the show. My next show, actually, on Thursday, I know I'm going to have the executive director of Queens Theater in the Park and to talk about the upcoming shows that they're going to be doing and about the park itself. The theater itself. Yes. I forgot about you. Yeah, Esther. Yes. Hi, Eunice. Okay. They wanted to say hello and goodbye. So, anyway. There's a lot that comes up on this, all my downloads. So now I have to find where it says the ending of the show, or I guess I call it, if I find it, I call it music intro. Okay. So, again, I'll be listening on Thursday. I didn't put the show up there yet. I'm confirming the times of people calling it. So, have a good day, morning, evening, or whatever you're doing.